I'm Gab. He's Jules. Blue skies over West. Actually, no.
It's raining badly.
Cold.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, sorry. Jules, what a show we had. We'll be talking FA Cup. Incredible bounce back from Chelsea. Bayer Leverkusen impressing again. Tons to get into, but I think there's one place to start, because I think the center of the footballing universe this weekend, or this week anyway, midweek, is Ivory Coast, the Africa Cup of Nations. We talked before about what a tremendous tournament it is. We have the semifinals. No spoilers. Ivory Coast are through. They beat the Democratic Republic of Congo.
That's right.
But we got to start with the other one. Nigeria against South Africa, because we've got Colin Udo with us. Colin, I think it's fair to say a lot of people didn't have Nigeria as the top two or three favorites in this tournament. And then it seemed like belief just grew. And then you play South Africa. I thought we weren't expected to be that far, to go that far at all. And I thought you wiped the floor with them, took the lead. Everything's easy. And then everything changes. They equalize. And they make you sweat all the way to the penalties. Yeah?
Oh, my goodness. Sweat a lot. But here's the thing. So I have Nigeria getting all the way to the final when I did my ESPN FC bracket. And I have my friend Dave Ed of laughing at me when I did that. But now, hey, who's in the final? It's Nigeria. Now, but before the tournament, when I think just before the tournament, Nigeria had a thing where they launched this Let's Do It Again campaign, saying that they were going to win a fourth. I got to confess, I was in Nigeria at the time when that mantra was launched by the Minister of Sports. And trust me, at the time, I did not believe it, mainly because of the way the team had been performing in the build-up to the tournament, the friendly games, the qualifying matches where they drew against Lesotho and Zimbabwe. So, I mean, forgive me if I didn't believe. But as soon as they got to the tournament, I've always said this. When it comes to AFCON, Nigeria are a tournament team. They're the only team that have made it all the way to 16, now counting this one, out of 19 times they've been at the AFCON. No other team has that number. And so once they got there, I thought, well, this is it. And then, of course, we've seen how it is. And South Africa, everybody keeps saying, oh, it's such a big rivalry in Nigeria. It is not a rivalry. You can't be a proper rival if you only win one game in 33 years. I mean, who even calls like a rivalry? But yeah, you're right, man. We took the lead, looked like we were coasting. Unfortunately, credit to them, they played with bravery, they played with panache. They came back, it was 1-1. But the mistake they made was in thinking that just because their goalkeeper stopped four penalty kicks against Cape Verde, he will do the same thing against Nigeria. Nigeria is not Cape Verde. And the moment the game got to penalty, I tweeted, I said, look, now Nigeria will win those penalty kicks. Well, I treated it just as soon as the game got to penalty kicks, and that's exactly what happened. Because one
confident man, Colin.
We had better players.
How do you feel about the final? Because Ivory Coast haven't been great at all, but it looked like everything clicked against Congo. It was maybe the best performance of the tournament for them, and obviously they will be at home in that incredible atmosphere. Would you still have Nigeria favorite?
You can't kill a ghost, Colin. You cannot kill a ghost.
They're already dead. Exactly. They're already dead. So what? I mean, how much deader can they get? You know. But yes, it's an incredible story for Cote d'Ivoire. We're the same group with Nigeria. They lost two games. And in fact, I can't remember any team that loses two games in a tournament and still make it all the way to the final. But Cote d'Ivoire did. And that's a remarkable story. And it's not just remarkable, it's incredible. I mean, when they lost those games and it looked like they were going out, we had fans out on the streets, rampaging, destroying things. Even the team boss, they fired their coach. They were looking for a new coach. They were even trying to get Marinard on loan from the French U.S. national team. And the FFM said, nope, we're not giving him to you. And so they got an interim coach. And all of a sudden, I mean, they're back. They get into the team from the back door as best third place, one of the best third place finisher. They get a new momentum riding this way, and they've taken that all the way to the final. And I did call DRC to get to the semifinal, but I thought that it would be either them or Mali getting to the final. So I still have a bit of something to be proud about in that case. I just did not see Cote d'Ivoire getting to the final. But having got there, and riding the momentum of this second life, so to speak, and also having the fans behind them. It's going to be a tough, tough game, but I do think that Nigeria might edge it.
At the start, we talked a lot about the attacking power, of course, that they have. When you have Osimhen and Lookman and Mofi, and even if Boniface is injured and not there, the talent that they have going forward was always incredible. However, they are in the final because they've been the best defensively. Were you surprised by how good they've been defensively through this tournament? They've only conceded 2 goals. They've had 4 clean sheets in a row at some point as well. Or did you know they were that good defensively too?
No. On that one, I hold my hand up. I did not expect that. I mean, if you look at the captain, William Troost-Ekong, who has been the main anchor of the defense, he hasn't played for Nigeria since November of 2022. And when I spoke to him, I think it was last week for an ESPN interview, he told me that at some point last year, just I think around November-ish, he was actually considering retiring from international football because of the snub he was getting from selectors. But he said he thought about it, he considered it, and then he spoke to the coach and was like, you know what, I wasn't sure I wasn't coming to the AFCON, but then I spoke to the coach and here I am. And he's been the linchpin of that defense. But here's the thing, Nigeria has played different combinations of centre-backs. And I mean, it's always been shaky at the back. It's the front line that has carried the team more or less on his shoulder. But Joseph Pesero has sort of, I think he's figuring it out. Nigeria historically, and you'll know this guy, George, you'll know it also. Historically, Nigeria have been built on attacking, even if we don't have the attackers, but you hear people in Nigeria talking about, wing play, the swashbuckling, attack, action, must attack, attack, attack. But I think when Pesero has kind of found the right formula in the sense that you build from the back, and that's what he's done. Instead of playing our irregular show at the back and advancing with attacking, he's kind of made it 3 centre-backs, 4 midfielders, 2 of whom are wing-backs, and then 3 forwards. And the idea being that we're not going to score many goals, but we're going to make ourselves hard to beat. And when you go to a tournament like this, the harder you are to score against, the easier it is for you to win. And when you have strikers who can take opportunities, even if they're only 1 in 10, then it makes things a lot easier. And so while Nigeria hasn't scored so many goals, Victor Osimhen has been a phenomenal player. The intensity that he brings to the front line, the high press that he brings, the way he gets defenders petrified out of their boots is what opened opportunities with the likes of Moses Simon and Ademola Lookman. So in that sense, yes, I was a bit surprised that defense has been so good this tournament. I think that I was hoping that at some point it will come good for Osimhen. He might get a couple of goals, but when the final, hey, who knows, maybe that's what happens for him or the other strikers.
I mean, I know how much you love Osimhen, but just before you go on Osimhen, imagine the, let's call it a year, between the Napoli title after all that weight, the African Player of the Year trophy that he won, if he was to lead Nigeria to winning AFCON for the first time in 10 years, I mean, Osimhen would be like, can you just imagine?
Yeah, and then he could move to Paris Saint-Germain.
Hey! Great idea.
I think Colin would like to see him in Manchester United. But anyway, we'll see.
Wait. That is the one thing I said. I don't want to see him anywhere in Manchester United. They leave.
One thing that I, like, I, being Italian, I've had a soft spot, as we know, for the Super Eagles
for a long time.
Ever since poor Gianfranco Zola
unfairly
sent off against them in 1994. But there's a lot of Italian in this team. It's not just Osimhen. It's not just Ademola Lookman, whose career is really taking off at Atalanta, has turned it around. He's been phenomenal this season. It's not just Ola Aina, who spent a bunch of years. It's Calvin Bassey, too. I don't fully know his story because the guy, when he talks, he's very London. But I discovered he was also born in a place where very few people of color are born, in Italy, which is Aosta, which is right up in the mountains on the border between Italy and France, where half the people speak French anyway. I just think it's a remarkable story. We can't claim
you
him.
You can't claim him.
But,
not at all.
But he's been a big part of that back three, right? And he's also established himself on a bad team, admittedly, in the Premier League this season.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can claim him, not just because he's Nigerian, but because his mom, and that's why you have the surname Bassey, is from the same state as I come from in Nigeria. So I've got one up on you, in that sense. But yeah, look, he went to Fulham, and he's been absolutely phenomenal there for him. And he's done the same thing with Nigeria. Playing that three centre-back system, he's held it down. He's been very unyielding, uncompromising. And, you know, he's got also gotten license to go forward on occasion. And he's done that brilliantly. So, it's, like I said, that defense has surprised me. And I love what they do, and I hope that they do it again, finally, against Cote d'Ivoire.
Okay, let's talk about Cote d'Ivoire then. Obviously, everybody knows the wonderful quote, can't kill a ghost, ghosts can't be scared. Frank Kessié is a poet in addition to being an absolute monster in midfield. We know the story about the two defeats, the pressure and so on, and it's kind of Disney-esque how they came back and how they came back and were so fortunate as well. Because those games, correct me if I'm wrong or if you disagree here, but in the round of 16, in the quarterfinals, they were fortunate to get back into the game and
it was
go
a miracle.
Through.
But even to qualify for the last 16 was a miracle.
And even that was an absolute miracle.
It was not in their own hands.
Yeah, it was out of their own hands. It was because they were among the four best third-place teams. But the semi-final, this was a completely different experience. They did play a lot better.
Yeah.
Colin, what's your theory on why they were so bad before? Did they just kind of wake up and say, hey, let's remember who we are. Let's remember that Seko Fofana, that Sebastian Haller. We've got all these big name players. Let's play well. Is that what happened?
Well, I mean, look, tournaments have a way of being very funny. And they came in, they stormed through, won their first game, and we were expecting that they would go on from there. And then they came up against Nigeria, they lost that game, and things just kind of began to go a little bit all right. Third game, again, we didn't expect that to happen, but they lost. And so we were out. Now, I think that's changed. First of all, the change in coach, and secondly, the reaction from the fans was probably one of the things that got them going. And I think that, with tournaments like this, sometimes you struggle through the group phase. I've seen, especially at the AFCON, you've seen teams that have struggled in the group phase, and then once they got past that, it was almost like they've got the monkey off their backs, and they just tend to blitzkrieg through the rest of the way. Cameroon have done that before. Ghana have done that. Even Nigeria, I mean, when we won the AFCON in 2013, we're this close to being eliminated in the group stages, but bounced back and got all the way there. So once you get into those knockout stages, especially if you're a team of the likes of Nigeria, Cote d'Ivoire, and so on, you kind of get a fresh win. And I also think that because they now had a local coach who understood the player, he sort of, breathed new life into them. And even critically, he brought back the experienced Max Gradel. He's a bit on over the hill, sort of, but he is part of the team that won the AFCON back a few years ago, Yaya Toure and the rest. And he's also got the experience, and he has been phenomenal for them in that team. So I think when you put all of this together, it's the whole combination of circumstances that has got them here. It's been narrow, it's not been easy, but they've made it. And I think that they'll be very difficult to put in the final.
I mean, Gradel is fascinating. He's 36 years old.
36. Exactly. I mean, if you look at it, he provided the cross that led to Sebastian Haller. Yeah. And it was the kind of cross that you probably wouldn't see before with the previous manager. Or maybe if things haven't gone too bad, but he was determined to get to the ball. He was determined to make that cross, and he made it. And Haller was in the right place, right time, and what a spectacular goal.
Yeah, and to be fair, Haller could have had a hat trick, and it's good to see him starting because he was not a starter at the start of the tournament. And after everything that happened to him, again, for dual national, because Haller is French and Ivorian, like MSFA too. I've got a really good fact about MSFA, by the way, completely pointless, but good. I would keep it for a bit later. But the thing about Gradel is 36, and I think, and I'm sure Colin will back me up on this, you win AFCON with a lot of experience. Jeremy Boga is certainly a better player right now than Gradel. He's much younger, he's much fitter, he's much quicker. He's a lot of things that Gradel was 10 years ago.
He's much more technical as well.
Yeah, yeah. But he doesn't have that experience. Like Colin said, only Aurier and Gradel were there in 2015 when Ivory Coast last won AFCON. And this is precious. And Boga is great, and I'm sure he will learn a lot from his opinion, but he doesn't have that kind of experience. He doesn't have the know-how. He hasn't been there before, especially when the pressure is there because you play on home soil. And I think this is also the key, and what I think what Faye has done really, really well is that he also put a lot of his faith in those guys. Casey came back, had a monstrous semifinal when he lost his place in the team before. There's a lot of factors that I think have played a fight. My fact about MSFA, MS is half French, half Iberian, has the two passports, like a lot of those players. He actually played against Nigeria with the French under 17 team back in 2001 in the under 17 World Cup final that France won against Nigeria 1-0. Colin was a very young reporter at the time. I was a very young, not yet reporter. But it's funny that MSFA now, in what is the maybe next biggest game in his life, as a coach
another
now,
shot against Nigeria.
Will face Nigeria, this time with Ivory Coast, not with France.
I think this is all remarkable. I'm struck by the fact that, you know, I get the part that when you get to the knockout rounds, you're hitting the reset button. That's what every coach says, right, in every tournament. The problem is they were still bad, though, in the round of 16 and in the quarterfinals. And this was the first game against a really, really good team. I mean, Colin, I know you had the Democratic Republic of Congo going really far. This is where they clicked together, came together.
Yeah.
Serge Aurier suspended.
Yeah.
Some people would say it's not a bad thing, maybe.
No, hey, that's guys, me.
He's going to go back. He's going to come back and start the final.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. He's going to start the final. You're 100% certain?
Well, I'm not 100%. I mean, I'm not the coach, so I wouldn't say 100% certain. But yeah, one would expect that he would start the final. But when you look at the way they play today, that's going to be a big, big call for the coach to get him to start the final. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they were this close to going home against Mali. Mali held the lead for so long, and they came back, scored that equalizer late in the game, and then came back and finished it off with two quick goals. And Mali, in fact, I think the Malians were heartbroken. Real. And speaking of a little bit of pointless fight skills, let me add this one to you. Herman Nkalele, the assistant coach of South Africa, played in the team that was beaten by Nigeria 24 years ago in the semifinal, 2-0. And now his assistant coach has played in the team that got beaten by Nigeria again in the second semifinal of the AFCON for the second time.
Yeah,
there you go. I love these regional tournaments throw up all these wonderful storylines, and there's so much familiarity. Copa America, very much the same way. Colin, I'm not going to ask you your prediction because you told us. you're choosing that you're picking Nigeria.
Imagine.
I have to pick Nigeria. Jules, you're going to pick Cote d'Ivoire because they're more Frenchy than...
Probably. I would say that Nigeria are a better team right now. There's just no doubt in everything that we've just mentioned, all the analysis that Colin has done in structurally, collectively, individually. But I don't think... the home support in every AFCON is always massive.
Yeah, did wonderful things for Ivory Coast earlier in the tournament, didn't it?
Yeah, well, who cares? They're in the final. Exactly. So I'll go for Cote d'Ivoire.
Colin Udo, thanks so much. Read the stuff on ESPN.com. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough AFCON. Jules, let's talk the magic of the FA Cup.
FA Cup magic.
I'm not being sarcastic here, but often we associate the magic with the FA Cup with unbelievable things happening, improbable things happening. And it's usually in Upstead, it's Maidstone United, you know, whatever. I thought this was equally improbable because you have Aston Villa, who are so strong at home, that had an incredible unbeaten run and so on. This is a trophy that you know, they can obviously they want to finish top four, but this is also a trophy that they can realistically win this season or have a shot at. And they're playing a Chelsea team who are in the final of the other cup trophy. So for the silverware crew, you got that covered. But also concede a ton of goals on the road, are coming off an absolute humiliation at home where they're booed off the pitch. They look at a very, very low ebb. And instead, what happens? Pochettino wipes the freaking floor with your man Unai Emery.
Incredible, man.
Stomps all over him.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody saw really that coming. To be fair, there's clearly something about Chelsea and cups and domestic cups this season between the League Cup and the FA Cup. Have as bad as the first game between them at Stamford Bridge was, that nil-nil draw. This one was incredible. And of course, if you score two goals in the first 20 minutes of a game like this, makes a big impact. If you score your first goal after 10 minutes. But Chelsea were outstanding. All the things that we mentioned the other day when we had a deep dive on them, the things that don't function, even the Caicedo-Enzo midfield partnership that was so good, I thought.
I think that was not the same Moises Caicedo. This is the original Moises Caicedo who was at Brighton, who played last night.
Yeah.
Not the dude who's been turning over Chelsea. It was incredible.
Yeah, and for... You know, Villa and the Camara Douglas Luiz partnership, whether you rate them or not, they have been bossing games at Villa Park this season, that midfield, with McGinn and Tielemans and whoever Unai plays. Caicedo and Enzo made them look like literally amateurs.
What I thought was really interesting, and I thought maybe kind of brave as well from Pochettino, was we've been saying, hey, dude, you have one center forward, and it's Nico Jackson with all his limitations. So what does he do? He switches it up for this game. He plays Nico Jackson on the wing. He is Cole Palmer, sort of pretendo centrally, basically alongside
even
Gallagher.
Even Gallagher, to be fair, was quite high up.
And Madueke on the other side, right, in place of Raheem Sterling. So he rolled the dice here. And it worked really, really well. Now, we can debate whether, is this something you want to see again? Do you really want to have Cole Palmer as your front guy? Are you going to play like the old Spalletti strikerless system that he did play with Totti or whatever? But on the night, it absolutely worked. They pressed high, they pressed well. Madueke was a monster down the right.
Yeah, with Malo Gusto as well. I mean, we said about Gusto before. Great going forward. The limitations for now, and he's still a very young player, are defensively. You saw the penalty he gave away on Cunha against Wolves, for example. But his cross is inch perfect for Nico Jackson. And it's a great goal by Nico Jackson because he doesn't have to think about anything. The ball arrives, it's his head, he goes in. That's perfect, you know? Everything worked for Chelsea defensively. The centre-backs worked well. Chilwell was decent compared to the mistakes that he made against Wolves. I don't know, but one of the problems that we've had was consistency with Chelsea this season anyway, because they've played well at times for 20 minutes. They have 20 minutes, okay, 15 minutes.
20 minutes,
half
whatever.
An hour. Yeah, but this time, for the first time this season, you know, was decent. Let's see if they can follow that up at the weekend.
It was interesting, too, because we had that situation where Thiago Silva's wife tweeted something for which she felt she had to apologize.
Yeah.
She said, like, oh, you know, this is unacceptable. I'm paraphrasing.
Things have
to
change.
Right? Things have to change, right? And then people said, like, oh, look, she wants Pochettino sacked, which I don't think I don't think this was her thought at all.
Could have been.
Look, she didn't grow up a Chelsea fan.
Very vocal, though. She's always been. She's great, Belle, but she's always...
But anyway, she apologizes. Thiago Silva's on the bench, and he gets spiky when he's asked, like, oh, why do you drop Thiago Silva? He's like, so, but I have other players, blah, blah, blah. Why are you screaming about him? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe because he's your captain.
He can't play three games in a week, though.
That's all you had to say. That's all you had to say.
Yeah.
All you had to say is the dude's 38, whatever. We're, you know. Enzo celebration, taking off the shirt, getting booked. I know there was that story about him leaving and he's pointing to the ground. I'm right here. Dude. Chelsea are not going to sell Enzo Fernandez unless he goes to Saudi, because he won't get their money back. They're going to take
They spent 120 million on
it. I think we can safely move on.
Just one last on Enzo.
Always the Enzo.
Have a problem with the
celebration.
You're
showing your London bias.
A problem with the shirt, the celebration, right?
Do I have a problem with it?
Yeah, it's an amazing goal. So after that, I can understand, after weeks of frustration.
You take a booking? Which could cost your suspension later in the fight.
If it's good for Messi, it's good for me. It's good for Enzo, surely.
Okay, first of all,
this is the Messi celebration, right?
All right.
If he'd scored a tap-in, he would not have done it. Freeze. He would not have done it.
None of this. None of, did you just say it was good for Messi?
If okay, Messi...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We don't mention Enzo and Messi. Unless we're reading the Argentina lineup.
If it's
lineup.
Good for Messi, it's good for me. That's what I said.
Maybe good for you, but not good for Enzo. Like, look, I don't no care problem. About that part. I don't associate...
No problem with
I do think. I do think a little bit with the I'm staying here. Yeah. We said, obviously you're staying here. But also, I also wonder how seriously do we... Because remember the last time he did the celebration, oh, I'm staying here.
At Benfica, yeah.
He was at Benfica, right?
Yeah.
After the initial bid?
Yeah, 2 days then, later he left, yeah.
So I don't really take seriously what he says. Yes, he's staying here because the window is closed.
Yeah.
And he's going to be here.
But Enzo is not can't be happy. Right? Any of those Chelsea players, I know they won last night. Great for them. They're in the fifth round of the FA Cup. Right. But nobody is happy, right? Right now, in that this is not where they should be, 11th in the table. They lost more games than they've won in the Premier League this year. This is not where they want to be. So you could understand if some of those players thinking like, hey, I'm here, but really, this is not.
You're just pursuing the media agenda against Chelsea because when Liverpool lose, as Pochettino says, I don't hear anything. No,
yeah, they lose as much.
No, of course they're not happy. And I think they feel they let a lot of people down. They let the club down.
Yeah.
They've let the fans down. They've let their manager down. And they want to do better.
That comes with a lot of rumors about future. That's what I mean. It always comes. If they were... Yeah, second in the league and doing well, no, there would be no rumors about them leaving.
But you don't start the rumors after the window closes, is what I'm saying, right? True. So I think you can put that on the shelf. I think it's encouraging they got a reaction. Now they need to build on it. Because a lot of times with
Chelsea,
to be fair, they have had spurts where they played well enough.
Yeah, of course.
But then something goes bad and then they kind of crumble, right? And here it was kind of the reverse. They crumbled. And now they showed a reaction. I think that's what Poch needs to build on because they played really, really well. Now, Villa, okay, you want to give him a pass and say, oh, it's hard to come back when you give up an early goal. Like, yeah, I know. But Wolves managed to do it and put four past Chelsea after conceding first. Sure. I was a bit surprised that Emery, who normally is, you know, tactically pretty sharp, except in that Newcastle game when they lost 5-0, but he didn't kind of work out what was going on. It was almost like he didn't expect that setup.
Yeah. But when you're chasing the game again, I think we go back to the early goals. I think it's hard to change your setup when you're goal down already, and you just need to come back into the game.
Okay, but
I just thought they like
you say this right, but I think the obvious thing, right? Tielemans is getting nowhere, right? So then obvious thing might be, hey, I'm a goal down, then two goals down. What if I bring on a winger since I got Diaby on the bench and Zaniolo, Diaby who I paid a lot of money for, and Zaniolo on the bench, and then I can move McGinn. You know, and I can change McGinn's position, and I can go back to the system that I've played most of the year.
I thought his subs were poor.
That would have been an obvious thing.
But he looked clueless. I mean, he was usually for him, he was standing up a lot in his area. He was sat a lot, almost like, I don't really know what's happening. I can't really understand what's happening. And it's probably a fair reaction in a way, considering how good Villa have been all season, especially at Villa Park. And I think he was probably a bit shocked by how good Chelsea were in general, how well they started, how aggressive they were, and maybe how not aggressive his own team was.
Yeah, I was shocked too watching it on television. But you know what? I'm not the coach, Villa coach on the sidelines who.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, he's been there before.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder too because from the Villa players' perspective, I think Emery needs to work quickly to make sure that there isn't fallout. From this, you know, in the sense that there isn't a situation where, oh wow, maybe we're really not that good. No, you have to keep believing you're that good. You're in fourth place in the Premier League for a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Go back, study what you did wrong, and then come back. And that's the one thing I don't know about, just given the nature of the lack of reaction.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, since the turn of the year or like start of January, you know, they drew out Everton 0-0, didn't score. And they could have scored in that. Yeah, but still. Then there's that draw at Chelsea in the reverse, the first game before this replay. They lost against Newcastle 3-1 at home, which already I think that game against Newcastle showed the limitations, that the same ones that we saw last night again.
We've improved. They gave up five goals the first time.
But it's still quite similar in the way that, you know, they go behind and they don't really know how to react. They concede two close goals with each other. And there's the win against Sheffield United 5-0. I mean, you and I could play against Sheffield United and we would win too. So it's just not, you know, I don't know. I'm a bit worried. They play United at home this weekend. a United team that is playing better, that is attacking better, scoring more goals. Remember one of Emery's, well, I think his first game even, was United at home when they had a great win and it really kick-started the Emery era. Let's see how they respond, because I really don't think it's an easy response after being so badly beaten by Chelsea. I know in the end it's 3-1. Okay, but it's a bad performance from them.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, enough FA Cup. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
This was way back on Monday, but Manchester City come from behind to beat Brentford 3-1 as Phil Foden bags a hat-trick and Erling Haaland makes his first start since December.
Yeah.
They're still looking good, right, Jules?
Yeah, they did, although they once again went behind, like we saw at Everton, for example.
They do this on purpose to make the games exciting.
A goal that maybe, I mean, it was fun. A goal they should never concede. Professional team, not even a grassroots team, at any age level, any age group, you cannot concede a goal from a goal kick where the ball bounces. It's not acceptable, right? But after that, they were great. They created a lot of chances. They could have scored more goals. Well done. Foden, KDB looks sharp, look great. Haaland, a little bit rusty. There's that one-on-one against Flecken that he misses. But overall, it was a good day at the office, you would say, for City, apart from that goal. Sticking with City, according to multiple reports, Gabby, they've agreed to sign Savio, who's at Girona, one of the revelations of La Liga this season, on loan from Troyes, even though he was only there for 22 days and had never played for Troyes ever. Gab, is this multi-club ownership at its finest?
Yeah, of course, because Troyes and Girona are part of the City football group.
Yeah.
They're major shareholders in them. I think the Premier League are aware of this, obviously. It's interesting. The Premier League are talking about, well, we're going to have a free market value policy when we assess, you know, these transfers. So to make sure that they can't sign Savio from Troyes. On the other hand, they own Troyes. I mean, Troyes wants to give him away. You can make the argument, why shouldn't they? You know, why do you introduce these rules after the fact? If it was the other way around, right? If for whatever reason Manchester City wanted to loan, I don't know, Gvardiol to Troyes, and Troyes said, like, we can't afford his wages. How would you do that? How would that work?
Yeah.
This is the problem. One of the issues is multi-club ownership. The other funny issue is, to this day, as the rules stand, the UEFA Congress is going on. I'm sure they can still change the rules. But you know that if Girona finish higher than Manchester City this season, as the rules stand right now, and if UEFA decide to apply them, Manchester City wouldn't be playing Champions League football, which I find absolutely hilarious.
It is.
Atletico Madrid lose at home to Athletic Bilbao in the first leg of the Copa del Rey semi-final. Jules, they paid a hefty price for that Reinildo and Berenguer tackle.
Yeah, they did. That was the only goal of the game. Berenguer scored that penalty kick. They didn't play at their best, Atletico, and this was the first leg. They were in Madrid, so they will have the second leg in
San Mamés.
At San Mamés in Bilbao, and they scored a late goal that was, they would have had a penalty, but Morata was offside. Griezmann, I thought, took a long time to get into the game, and in the end, it was just not enough. I don't think this tie is over yet, because they can go to Bilbao and win. But it was their first defeat at home this season at the Civitas Metropolitano. So, not a good day, not good enough for Atletico Madrid and for this Athletic Club, the Bilbao team. It's just, they're still putting those results up. I think it's really impressive. Really impressive. Also back on Monday night, Roma beat up Cagliari 4-0 as Paulo Dybala scores twice. Gab, they're just 1 point away from fourth place.
Yeah, 3 wins in a row for Daniele De Rossi since replacing Jose Mourinho, though, of course, 3 wins against pretty bad teams.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? Their football's completely changed. They're playing very attacking football. They had Angelino out there after his move, and he looked really good. He attacks well.
Of course.
So it's exciting. They really believe they're going to finish top four. I told you.
It's a big game of the weekend, though. That's a big test.
Obviously a big one, yeah. Bayer Leverkusen come from behind to beat Stuttgart at home and advance to the German Cup semi-final thanks to a late goal from Jonathan Tah, of all people.
Yeah, Gab. Yeah, I mean, this is what they do in 2024. They score late to go and win matches. There's were still impressive the way they played in what was a strong team, very strong Stuttgart team, as well in a really, really good game. They're unbeaten now in 30 games this season, 15 home, 15 away. They've been incredible. They're 2 games away from the record from Bayern Munich for a German team to stay unbeaten in all competition. It's really, really impressive.
And they're playing Bayern Munich, of course.
And then they're playing Bayern Munich this weekend, which is an incredible game coming up in the Bundesliga, and we can't miss it. It's going to be very special, but for now, amazing. Really.
Florian Wirtz, player of the season in the Bundesliga?
He's been 15 assists already.
He's been walking on air the last month.
Ridiculous. Gab, Lisandro Martinez will reportedly be out for 2 months after picking up yet another injury against West Ham last weekend. Manchester United can't catch a break. How big of a blow this is?
I think it's a blow because they're a much better team when they have a composed defender back there. Maguire is the other defender who's supposed to be composed, of course, but you probably don't want him out there. I think Varane's mind is elsewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Lindelof is injured, and if you were fit, and then you have your pal Johnny Evans. Or you move Luke Shaw into the middle.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good. Not good.
It's not.
Jules, you can never have enough Manchester United. Our colleague Rob Dawson reports that they will target players who have 1 year left on their contracts this summer, partly because money is tight. So among the players that they're targeting, and I just want to get your quick view on these.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, this is like kind of like a captain obvious that like with 1 year left, you're not going to be as expensive. Joshua Kimmich, Jonathan David, Kefren Turam, and Alphonso Davies.
Yeah, great list, of course. I mean, there's pros and cons for all those players. And it's not because they have 1 year left on the contract that they're going to be cheap either, by the way. Yeah, they'd be cheaper than if they had 4 years left on their contract. But even with 1 year, they're still going to cost you a fair amount in terms of transfer fee and then bonuses, wages, all of that. Also, those players will not come to you if you're not playing in the Champions League next season. So finishing top four, before you think about anything else, should be your priority here.
Also, frankly, of these four, I'm pretty sure Joshua Kimmich is going to extend.
Okay.
Jonathan David's having a horrendous year. You could probably
It's a bit better now, but yeah.
Kefren Turam. So remember who the agent is.
Yeah, and he got injured.
And Fonzie, I don't know, people keep telling me.
He's going to Madrid.
He's going to Real Madrid, so yeah. We'll see.
It's not easy, yeah. Barcelona director Deco spoke out this morning on Thursday and said there are no plans to sell Araujo or Frankie de Jong, that Lamine Yamal will get a new contract when he turns 18, and that they are not speaking to any manager, zero talks. That makes sense to you?
You're telling me there's no plan to sell Araujo or Frankie de Jong, of course, because Frankie de Jong, you try to sell him, he doesn't want to leave.
Yeah.
No, those are the two saleable assets. He doesn't have to make the decision now in the summer. They may not have a choice.
Yeah.
Lamine Yamal getting a new contract is obvious. Not speaking to any manager, no, that would make no sense because you have a manager who's told you that he's leaving at the end of the season. So,
so they have to prepare.
But look, it's funny. When Deco talks, are we supposed to believe he's giving us the gospel truth?
No, true.
Exactly.
True.
So.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
Paris Saint-Germain are through in the French Cup beating Brest 3-1. Jules, it did better than when they played them in the league, no?
Yeah, because they won instead of the 2-2 draw that we had at the Parc des Princes. But Brest, they are a good team. They are a really good team. And this PSG team, Gabby, again, especially in the second half, they fall asleep. They don't wake up from their half-time break nap. There's something just not working. And they could have even at 0-0 before Mbappe scored the first goal. They were under pressure at times, but they should never be under pressure against a team like Brest. And I'm telling you, this is not good. There's still a lot of work to be done. And by now, I would have expected not really to be. The Premier League's chief football officer, Tony Scholes, says that VAR has been nowhere near good enough this season.
No relation to Paul, as I understand.
No,
it doesn't even look like him much.
No, it doesn't.
He says there's too many checks and they take too long. In-stadium experience for supporters is bad because they don't know what's going on. Okay, fine. Like you're kind of parroting what the people in the media say all the time. What I thought was interesting, though, then he pointed out that this year they've been 20 VAR mistakes. Last year there'd been 25. Now, let's remember, this dude works for the Premier League, not for the PGMOL,
right? Yeah, yeah.
So presumably they have their own way of tracking these mistakes. And then, again, I don't know where this data comes from, but this is before VAR. 82% of referee decisions were correct. Now it's 96%. So you've gone from like nearly 1 in 5 to 1 in 25. Again, who works that out? To me, it seems like a win-win.
If it's the truth, it's good.
If it's the truth.
Yeah.
Jules, it wasn't just Chelsea and Villa in the FA Cup replays, though Premier League snobs like me might have thought so. What else stood out?
Well, you'd be glad to learn that Nottingham Forest have gone through on penalties against Bristol. Not great. Even the performance was
great. Bristol City, I believe. City, as we present, there's two teams, I'm told.
Yeah, Rovers and City. That was City. Really good performance from their point of view on penalties. We saw Coventry, Leeds, Southampton from the Championship. Not your favourite teams, of course, going through. And we will have, I think, three all Premier League ties in the fifth round of the FA Cup, so still potential for, you know.
Not just that, but Chelsea playing Leeds as well with a sort of a 1970s vibe about
that. Like that, Stamford
Bridge? Big rivalry. Exactly. I mean, something for Chelsea to get excited about.
We'll see Maidstone, who will travel to Coventry, I think. A study by the Times newspaper has revealed that the amount of English qualified players starting in games continue to drop, and it's now at its lowest in the past 10 seasons, less than 30%. Is there a concern if you're Gareth Southgate or an England fan?
Which I'm not.
Me neither. Not at all.
I don't think so, because so it's dropped down, and it's actually probably even lower, because two of these guys, the list includes Michael Olise and William Osula from Sheffield United.
Olise, who played for France under 21, you mean?
He played for France under 21, so they're still eligible, but Osula played for Denmark. But here's the reason why I'm not concerned, is that it's been around that 30, 31, 32% mark for the last 10 years, and guess what? England got really good in that time. They have a really good national team. I mean, like a really, really talented national team. On top of that, there's very good English players playing abroad, like Jude Bellingham, for example, or that Harry Kane chap, or, you know, so this idea that, back in the day when nobody from elsewhere would buy English players, I think that's gone. So, and I think it means that the guys who are eligible play for England, play in the Prem, they face a tougher standard of competition day in, day out. Yeah. There's no need to be protectionist, is there?
No, I agree with you.
Anybody, it's funny because every time, for example, Italy go out of a tournament, right? They go and they blame this situation. I'm like, it's stupid. Just learn the facts, realize that it can make you better.
True, but the point is wider about young players coming through from academies who won't have a chance because there are a lot of foreigners in the Premier League as well.
Right.
To what you can answer, if you're good enough, whether there's only 30% English players starting in the Premier League or not, you will play. If you're not good enough, you play in the Championship, League One, or League Two. It's as simple as that.
The nice thing of being an entitled European is that, you know, you're not on the Cook Islands. You can just simply go an hour away and find other professional clubs where you can play. Like, I mean, that's the simple reality of it. It's different in France, I suppose, because every year all the best players leave, right?
It's until okay.
It opens up space for the next generation.
Yeah, exactly. We're very happy with that model.
Bild report that Bayern have reached an agreement with Leipzig to release sporting director Max Eberl. Jules, we knew he was coming.
Yeah, we knew.
We knew it was just a question of time. It's a weird situation always have in Germany where they have to release the guy, pay compensation. I always find it weird. How much has he moved the needle?
I mean, it's hard to tell. Great CV, of course, in terms of knowledge, in terms of network, everything good. You wonder where that leaves Christopher Freund, who's been acting sporting director this season. Really, not that maybe Thomas Tuchel thinks he's great, but this is his job. So I think Eberl is even like higher up on the board, some kind of advisory role too, as well as shaping up the sporting director side and recruitment side. Let's see. The way I see as well, maybe very cynically, is it just as another layer of more argument coming and somebody else deciding again on top of everything that we've seen this season. It's another voice. I mean, Eberl is a strong personality.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would be popcorn, Hollywood, box office again.
So, but it's funny because he's been linked for a long time, even while Nagelsmann was still there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the thinking was he can maybe be the Nagelsmann whisperer and handle him, blah, 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 because they obviously have a relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is going to work with Tommy T. I don't know what kind of, you know.
It's a good point.
And that's going to be pretty critical.
Yeah. Napoli president Aurelio De Laurenti spoke out in a marathon press conference this week and had plenty to say, Gab.
Yeah, I was almost like, oh, let me see him go make some headlines. I'll just give you some highlights. He talked about how he got Napoli way ahead of Juve and he did it without cheating, which I'm sure Juve really appreciated. He said that when he got rid of Rudy Garcia, who of course he brought in to replace Balletti at the start of the season, he told him to F off.
Of course.
And on Spalletti. Oh, he said that Bari, which is owned by the same company that owns Napoli, and his son is the president there. He said, "Oh, Bari are our B team," which would make it illegal. Yeah, and no, they're not. And the son said, "I don't know what he's talking about. He must have misspoken. We're definitely not their B team." And then on the breakup with Spalletti, he said, "Oh, look. I ended up giving him way too much power. I mean, after all, he hadn't won anything outside of Russia, as if that doesn't count.
It's not very gracious, though.
Sounds like something Mourinho might say.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if he's been talking to Mourinho. Anyway, whatever. And then he said, look, in the end, I expected better in the Champions League. And Napoli, of course,
reaching
the quarterfinals in the Champions League. Oh, I thought that they would do better. And his argument was, Inter did really well, reached the final against Manchester City.
Yeah.
You know, very, very close game.
Yeah.
And he says, and Inter finished 20 points behind us in the league, so we're better than Inter. So I thought we could have won the Champions League.
Okay.
Now, you're setting a ridiculously high bar. I don't know if he wants people to think that he's a crazy person.
I don't know.
Or I don't know.
Does he want sympathy, do you think, or what?
It's pretty unhinged. I mean, I think he might be getting a call from lawyers at Juve, by the way.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Lyon are on a roll. Big win for them against Lille to advance in the Coupe de France. Jules, more credit for John Textor because it's
credit.
Him, yeah?
More, and the gift scored his first goal. The gift
Orban?
Gift Orban that keeps on giving, scored his first goal. Really lovely finish. They were good. Even when you benched Lacazette and Matic, one of the new signing, Nouama as well, then they still perform well. Cherki was great in the 4-3-3. They go back to back four, by the way, when Pierre Sage, the coach that took over Grosso, or Stonewise, as we've been calling him, of course, in the English translation on the show, usually play the back three. This time a back four, that worked really well. Lille were one of the teams the most informed in France. So to go to Lyon and get spanked, because they got spanked. I know it's only 2-1, but they got spanked properly.
You're going to blame my man Paolo?
No. I mean, it's funny because, just quickly, Paolo after the game, Paolo Fonseca said, well, you know, we dominated the game. One of those interviews for managers where you think, really? Did we watch the same game here? And the president, Olivier Letang, the Lille president, came out and spoke to the press, which is never a good sign, and said, listen, players took it for granted. They were too full of themselves after the good result that we've had lately. This was not acceptable. So clearly a very different message from the president and the manager. Let's see what they do at the weekend where they play. Oh, yeah, in Paris against PSG. So good luck with that one. UEFA vote on package term limits, and EFA and the English FA, sorry, stand against what Seferin wants.
It was interesting. The vote has gone through. They voted this morning, and it was a package of reforms, which includes some things that I think everybody agrees on about sort of opportunities in women's football and more solidarity, but also revising the term limits in such a way that would make it possible for him to go and run for a third term, which, of course, probably against the spirit of the laws when he took over.
Definitely.
What was interesting was, and I guess this is politics, you know, he packaged the vote on the term limits together in the same kind of bill, so to speak, he bundled them all together to ostensibly to save time with a bunch of other reforms that everybody agreed on.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, you know, you might have seen if you've been following U.S. politics, aid for Ukraine, and then vote for the, you know, security at the border were two different things, but to get it through, we bundle it all together. As a result, and on top of that, he also called for, rather than a secret vote, secret ballot, they also called for to go and have the vote, everybody kind of hold up a card, right? Red card, green card.
It's all public.
When it goes all public, you know that people aren't going to stand against them unless they lose. And in the end, the FA voted against the English FA because they're the English FA. They can do what they like. Others, I think it's fair to say, would have voted against had it been anonymous, but they didn't want to stand up and kind of pick a fight.
Yeah.
Look, you know my thoughts on this. He has said, I haven't decided yet on a third term. You've just given yourself the power to have a third term, so people will assume you have a third term. I think I would leave the. I don't think it's a good look to have a third term. I don't think it's healthy for any organization. You've done a lot of really good things in fighting into Super League, in reaching a deal for the new reform of the Champions League, the Swiss model, which may work, which may not work, but not easy to hash out an agreement between the clubs and so on. And you've managed to do it while continuing to give away all this money back to the clubs and solidarity, including the little clubs. If you just focus the rest of your time on putting in place good governance for whoever comes after you and then sail off into the sunset, I think you're going to be remembered very well. If you're seen as somebody who's trying to hang on, I think people might view you a little differently because you've seen the attacks from people like Boban, from people like David Gill. Those are people you want to keep on your side, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's the fun part of breaking news, but as we recorded that, you'll recall that we suggested to Cheffrin that he probably might choose not to want to run again. And I don't know if he was listening, but he has now announced that he will not stand for a third term. Personally, I think that's good for the European game. May he spend the rest of this time now focusing on leaving a good legacy and good governance for UEFA.
Let's go to the Asian Cup, Jules. Defending champions Qatar are through to the final with a dramatic comeback against Iran. They had a chance to make it 3-3 in the 13th minute of injury time.
It was a great game, really attacking game, really, really good game. This competition has been good. I know we talked a lot about AFCON, but the Asian Cup has been really good as well this year in Qatar. Qatar will defend the title, as you said, back-to-back final. This is pretty impressive in itself. I'm not sure they were the better team against Iran, I won't lie.
No, Iran were the better team.
Yeah, but they rode their luck a little
bit. But you know, Qatar, they have that incredible home support.
They have
the home support. At the World Cup, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know what happened at the World Cup, really, because they're certainly a better team than what they showed at the World Cup, for sure, even against tougher opposition, of course. But they've been good in this competition, even if we said they rode their luck in that semi-final, and I think Iran could feel like they let the opportunity to qualify for another final slip. In the end, we'll have Qatar in the final. And against who? Well, Gabby, they will face Jordan and my boy Moussa Al-Tamari, who we've mentioned a lot on the show, was outstanding in the other semi-final. This was quite the upset as Jordan beat South Korea.
Yeah, upset on paper because South Korea are, you know, obviously a much bigger pedigree. They have many more famous players other than your buddy Al-Tamari, who, you know, is a celebrity in the Lawrence household.
Yeah, but he's great in
French
Ligue 1.
Second division or, you know.
He plays in Ligue 1.
Sorry, Ligue
1. Come on.
Yo, by the way, just a little side note. You know the biggest spending league in the world?
Yeah.
In the January transfer window?
Of course. Liga?
Liga, of course.
The best team in the world, too.
Second biggest spending, Brazilian Serie A.
Exactly.
Going back to this game, we talked about how Korea had been really, really fortunate in their last two outings, coming from behind, getting the late bounce, lurking on emotion. But I thought a little bit like Cote d'Ivoire. I said, like, hey, look, maybe they'll just click together in the semifinal. They have a lot more quality than Jordan. No, they lost 2-0, I think. Our man Jurgen is going to get, he's already being slaughtered by the local media.
Yeah.
He's going to have to carry a lot of blame.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen my boy Altamari's goal, solo effort, it's just amazing. He's so good. A goal and an assist in the semi-final of the Asian Cup is pretty cool.
The amazing thing about this final, like, and obviously we don't want to bring politics into it, but Jordan against Qatar, there's a lot of layers there, given the history of Jordan, the founding of the Jordan, of State of Jordan, the Palestinians were there.
Yeah.
Qatar, I think...
In Qatar as well, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say 99% of the Arab world will be backing Jordan, no matter how kind the Qataris are.
Definitely.
But yeah.
Definitely.
More fun times for Karim Benzema in Saudi Arabia. He reportedly stormed out of Al Ittihad's training session after clashing with coach Marcelo Gallardo. Now, it happened with Nuno Espirito Santo, and you can understand because it's Nuno, right?
Yeah.
Seeing his face every day, you just want to run the other way.
Yeah.
But Gallardo, come on.
Gallardo is tough, though. He's really tough.
And but they can speak in French.
Authoritarian. And, it, yeah, not sure about the French. I mean, we knew they didn't get on, obviously. I don't know who's for. I don't know who is it to blame, both of them. Karim,
come on. Gallardo. One is the dream, the other one's Gallardo. Yeah, doesn't have the pelotas to come coach in Europe.
La Muñeca. No, yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where, I don't know what the issue. The issue might be way deeper than just Gallardo as a coach anyway. And you remember Karim being stuck in Mauritius, obviously. There was a storm. There really was a storm.
Uh-huh.
I just don't know where this is going, where this is leading. Obviously, I think Karim would have liked to come back to Europe. That was not possible. They tried to shift him to another Saudi club, and he was like, come on, please. So let's see. The only thing I know is that Al Ittihad would be much better with Karim Benzema in their team than not, that they are not doing well in the league. They're seventh. So let's hope for everyone that this gets solved and sorted out. But knowing Karim Benzema like I do, I'm not so sure. There's still a long way.
This whole thing is really, good look, it's really embarrassing. Yeah, yeah. It's really embarrassing also for what Karim Benzema stands for, in the sense that...
But again, I don't know the whole story.
No, but why? What he stands for in terms of, you move to Saudi Arabia, the man is a Muslim of Arabic descent, who's also outwardly, I think, quite religious right? I mean, he's not the only Muslim. Sadio Mane is obviously Muslim.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, the difference is he's Karim Benzema.
Yeah.
And then he moves there, and you just can't get along.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with all due respect, and certainly with Nuno, and I don't know if they were stupid and they said, oh, okay, Nuno, fine. But when we bring in the next manager, since we've built our whole campaign and everything around him, let's make sure that it's somebody that Benzema can work with.
Yeah.
Right? Instead, it's a bit like Inter Miami did. I mean, I'm sure Lionel Messi could change the club colors to whatever he wants if he asks for it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You have to treat this the same way.
I know.
But they haven't.
Yeah. So Jim Ratcliffe reportedly wants to turn Old Trafford into the Wembley of the North. Not really sure what that means, but nobody would disagree with that, will they, Gab?
You could.
As in, like a big stadium in the North. Is that what that means?
A big, prestigious stadium for massive events. Wembley will host the Champions League final later this year, of course. Not everybody likes Wembley. I'm not the biggest fan. But, hey, whatever. It's, if you mean let's invest in the stadium in Old Trafford and make it better than what it is. I mean, you know, every single time we talk to Mark Ogden, he reminds us that, like, they have a leaky roof.
Yeah, it's falling apart. Yeah.
It's time to sort it out. We've had the UEFA Women's Champions League draw, Jules. Who you got?
This is really good, Gabby, I think.
Many Norwegian, sort of Scandi teams that I haven't heard
good.
Of.
They've always been good in Scandinavia. So this is the four quarterfinals: Ajax against Chelsea, Benfica against Lyon, Haken against PSG, and Brian against Barcelona. I think the trickier draw is the one for PSG because Haken are a good team. We saw that against Real Madrid and Paris FC and Chelsea in the group stage. PSG did beat them twice last season in the group stage of the Women's Champions League. It's a better team now. PSG are still the favourite, but especially with the second leg in Paris. But this is going to be good. The rest, I think Barca, far too good for Brian. I think Lyon are far too good for Benfica. I like Ajax and the pace that they've got up front, but Chelsea, even without Sam Kerr, should be too strong. What's interesting is that the bracket towards the final is all done. So we could have a Chelsea-Barca semi-final on one hand and an all-French semi-final on the other hand between Lyon and PSG, if both Lyon and PSG win against Benfica and Haken. So really, really good. This happens in March, if I'm not mistaken, or late February and late March, something like that, because obviously there's the Women's Nations League is happening in March too. So really, really good fixtures, I think.
I think it's super cool that big historic European clubs like Ajax and Benfica, you know, not seen as powerhouses in the women's game.
That's the fair point.
They managed to advance in a way, you know, and kind of in to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, which I think is a big deal. I was going to joke that their men's team wouldn't do it, but obviously Ajax did it a few years ago and Benfica did it last year. So obviously that's not the case, but it shows and hopefully can build momentum at that level too.
Yeah. Frank Lampard has been seen around Chelsea a lot recently. We mentioned that in previous shows. Gab, some outlets are reporting that he's been lined up to replace Emma Hayes when she leaves the women's teams at the end of the season to go and coach the US in the summer. No, you don't, seeing your face, you don't...
I think... There are many who've done both, right? People who've coached the men's game, gone to the women's game. There's some results have been very, I'm talking at a high level, right? Results have been very, very mixed. And you can say, oh, but it's the same. It's football, blah, blah, blah. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. The conditions, I think, are often different than what, you know, even at a club like Chelsea, than what Frank Lampard has been used to do when he's been coaching in his time at Everton and Derby and Chelsea themselves. If he wants to test himself and wants to do it, it's a tremendous platform because Chelsea are obviously a powerhouse in women's football. And if he goes back into the men's game, he ain't getting a powerhouse for a while. He's got to build himself back up.
Yeah.
And obviously he likes the club, doesn't live far away. Sure, why not?
I mean, it's an interesting debate. We had it when Hervé Renard took over the French women team, in the sense that he had zero experience in women's football before, never watched it from his own admission, never really looked into it.
But that doesn't
mean he's not going to do a bad job.
No, but his daughter, Wendy, being such a huge figure on the... Okay, sorry. I can't make that joke every time. I can't help myself.
So I think there is a case to say, like, should you not, especially at a club like Chelsea, where results have to be there, where you need someone with experience in women's game before? I don't know. I'm all for giving a chance to anyone. But I think it's no surprise that the big, big job in women's football usually goes to managers who've been in that side of the game before, which is completely understandable.
Yeah, there's different challenges, and it's not just different challenges in terms of men and women. It's also different challenges that the people you deal with when you're managing in the men's game at the level he's managed at, those are all multimillionaires who don't have to work for life, right?
Yeah.
There aren't many multimillionaires who are set up for life, even at the very highest level of the women's game. They're one injury away from saying, okay, I'm going to go coaching the rest of my life or whatever, right? Yeah. You're going to have a real job. You know, I can't just sit in my basement and podcast as some ex-footballers do.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
Samuel Eto'o offered to resign as head of the Cameroon FA. This is after the allegations about him. That he was on the phone with guys from the second division, his friend.
Supposedly
arranging things. He has a million allegations against him. Those are just the football ones. I think he also has two different daughters in two different countries who've come forward and they've taken paternity tests, child support payments, whatever. And yet, why do people still want to keep him at the...
I think he offered to resign.
Like, please stay. But what are we going to do without you?
As you know, and some listeners may know, may not know, it's very political in African football to be head of your country's FA. A lot is down to who's in power, who the government is, who the sport minister is. As well, and he clearly has their backup. He's also Samuel Eto'o, and I think the name and the celebrity and what he achieved in the game plays in his favor, which is fine. I completely understand that, despite all the controversy, despite also Cameroon not being very good. Let's be honest, since he took over as the head of the FA.
Despite that, I think it's pretty clear Andre Onana doesn't like him very much.
No.
But then Andre Onana is probably not very popular in Cameroon right now.
The World Cup, okay, they qualified, and obviously they had an incredible game against Algeria to qualify and to knock out Algeria to it. But then the World Cup in itself was not great. This AFCON certainly hasn't been great. I'm not sure if Rigobert Song really is the answer. But for now, we still have a bit more of Samuel Eto'o with us. So let's see. Let's see if he can make things better, I guess.
Rigobert Song made history at the World Cup as a place, and I know you love your trivia.
Yeah.
Do you know what it was?
Was it become the oldest to play and coach in a World Cup?
He was the youngest player to get sent off in a World Cup game.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant in the last World Cup. Oh, okay, yeah. I did not know that. Jesse Lingard finally has a new home. Hey, well done. He's doing FC Seoul.
FC Seoul, yes, in Korea. This isn't like, you know, Seoul isn't like some cool USL franchise name or something.
No.
Like, despite what people will say, I'm pretty sure that FC Seoul he's not going there for the money, because I don't think they have a lot of money to spend on him. Credit to him. He wants to get back. He's obviously tried out. He's had trials all over the Premier League and around Europe. He had no offers. And he's
so that's the only offer he had, right? That's why he took
it. He didn't even have offers from... Wouldn't you think that he'd have at least one offer from one of the really bad Saudi... You know, the ones with, like, no budget.
Yeah.
Players from the Romanian fourth division, right? No, he said no offers whatsoever. I mean, none that he would entertain.
Yeah, yeah.
he goes to a decent league in Korea.
I mean, I know.
It's not because unless his mate owns the club, I don't think so.
No.
So he's challenging himself. Yeah. Good luck to Jesse.
That's not bad. Let's see how he does that.
More fallout from Lionel Messi's non-appearance in Hong Kong, Jules. Yeah. And especially angry after he saw that he was back for the game against Vissel Kobe, to the point that the Guardian's words, the government-controlled newspaper, Global Times, they actually wrote about Lionel Messi. And they pointed out that it was the only one where that he didn't appear this season. And they said, and I quote, "The situation has magnified these doubts and suspicions on the integrity of Inter Miami and Messi himself." Politics coming in? Is there going to be a trade war between Jorge Mas and China?
I know, it's a bit strong. I mean, I don't think we will ever see Inter Miami back in Hong Kong anytime soon anywhere, to be fair. Hey, listen, if he's injured, he's injured. Well, you know, Messi, if he could have played 10 minutes to make people happy, of course he would have. He came on late against against Vissel Kobe. Like, come on.
You know my thoughts on this. First of all, the casual fan who just wants to show up and say, like, I saw Messi walk up and down for 5 minutes, right? You're a sad person that I can't relate to. The government officials, the people in the media who are turning this into a case, like, you are a leech and a mooch, and you don't belong in this conversation because this is a sports conversation. It's a freaking friendly. Grow up. You cannot be so obsessed with somebody.
You also pay them to come because you want to see Messi, of course. And you saw all the people
Messi
shirts.
I'm sorry. You think that Messi wouldn't have been rather rehabbing in his hotel room than sitting on that crappy bench? You don't think David Beckham would have rather been off doing something else, whatever it is he does, looking in the mirror, than being there?
Yeah.
You sign the Messi for the club. You signed the contract to have Inter Miami, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And, I mean, they saw Busquets, not for long because he also got injured. But anyway, Sevilla won away to Rayo Vallecano on Monday night. But, Gab, it wasn't a joyful experience for Lucas Ocampos. That's an incredible story.
It's incredible to a point. I mean, all right, so obviously...
I've never seen anything like this before.
At Rayo Stadium, they're very close to the pitch. The man's taking a throw-in, and somebody goes and essentially pokes him in his behind.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, put his finger in his bum.
Okay, but first of all, it's not like he's being actually fingered because he's wearing underwear and shorts,
right? Yeah, but still, it's not nice.
I'm sure it's not nice. But he goes out, he said, and I quote, "I hope La Liga takes it as seriously as they take racism." Okay, which is when you make a joke, being like, ha, 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 so you don't want to take it seriously at all. All right, first of all, let's not compare this to racism.
Yeah,
right? Like, just
Lucas,
leave that to one side.
We feel for you and your band, please.
Wait, it's tone deaf and stupid, right, to say that. But frankly, like, a person's in the crowd, there's pictures of him. If you want to consider it assault.
No, but you have to. You can't touch a player. You're a fan. You cannot touch whatever way it is unless the player come for a hug after scoring a goal. You don't touch a player because if you let that go, then what's next? You slap the back of his head when he does the throw? Do you see what I mean?
Slapping the back of the head would probably be more pleasant than what happened to Lucas Ocampos, to be fair.
But it's still not nice and you don't expect it as a player.
Taking
a throw in fearing of what's happening behind you.
But don't compare stuff like to racism and stuff like that. They'll find the guy. Whatever I said, I saw him. I could provide a description myself.
Yeah, I can still remember his face now. Yeah,
and I'll be sure to avoid him if I go to Vallecas. Jules, that brings us to an end. But you got to come back on Monday without me because I am off. I am off.
Well deserved holidays.
I'm off to Africa. I am not going to the Cup of Nations final.
It would be finished by then. Anyway.
I think that might. That, I don't know. It's a missed opportunity for.
Yeah.
Anyway, until then. Love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.